drawing room over here.
Are you on the list? Oh, doesn't matter. Come on in. Here, have one of these. Now, I want you to imagine, if you will, a sense of profound exhaustion, and couple that to a sensitivity to light and sound, not being able to stand, sometimes not even being able to find it within yourself to speak. Now, when Jennifer Breyer had a period of extended illness, she expected that to run its course, that life would resume as it was before, as she recalled it. But that didn't happen. And it turned out, after a period of great uncertainty and quest and investigation, it turned out that Jennifer had chronic fatigue syndrome. And that has another long and complicated name that we'll come to in a moment. She has turned that experience, that story of her life to this point, into an extraordinary film. It's called Unrest. And Jennifer Breyer joins me in the drawing room along with her husband, Omar Wasso, and welcome both.
Thank you.
This, Jennifer, is an amazing film. And one of the most amazing things is, and you say this at one point in this, that you just didn't know what to do apart from keep filming. And that must have been such an effort of the will.
It was, but it was also necessary. I had gotten sick when I was 28 and became bedridden really over the course of a few months. And as I was starting to disappear and I didn't know what was happening to me, I felt like I needed to document it. And that really came from needing a place to put that fear and that grief about what was happening to my life.
And to hang on to some sort of external fixed point of reality, maybe? I mean, you talk about disappearing. That's an interesting thing.
Well, I think what was hard is that I was living, you know, in the privacy of my home, this reality that I'd never imagined. I was in bed 23 hours and 54 minutes a day and often had a hard time just getting around the house. And that wasn't what I expected from my life. And at the same time, as I would try to explain to people even my friends and my family what was happening to me, it was very hard for them to understand because they weren't there. And so that's really why I started filming, to try to show people what happens to us when we are severe and when we aren't feeling well.
And we see in the film, Omar, the two of you in life before the illness, this couple so full of joy and life and activity. It's a necessary contrast in the film.
Yeah, we loved hiking and traveling and kayaking and mountain biking, and it was a very full and active
life. You're pretty
life.
Rubbish in a kayak, by the way.
Yeah, and yeah, I didn't say it was good. And so it was a very sharp contrast to getting married and then having Jen be bedbound. But I also... the person I fell in love with was still there as somebody who was a kind of creative person who just like loved the world. And so I think that's also part of why you started to document yourself, was like you couldn't help but – it's like you're almost compelled to tell stories and to try and do something to make meaning of even the meaningless. Mm.
I mean, that's sort of the lesson in life almost in the film, is that this is life. This life is different. This life has changed. But this is me.
Yeah, well, I think what's been really hard, and anyone who wrestles with a chronic illness, whether it's ME or another illness, I think has to do this at some point. You have to keep fighting to get better, and you have to keep hope that you will find things that will help and that science will catch up and help find better treatments. And at the same time, you have to learn to accept where you are and try to live as good a life as you can within the bounds that you have of your disability. And fighting and accepting and, you know, loving where you are and struggling to change where you are all at the same time, that took years for me to learn how to do. But that's really, I think, what the journey of the film is in many respects.
Is that a reframing for you from illness to disability? Is that a different mental perception?
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to put it. I started off as someone who was sick, and I am still sick. But I think at the beginning, I felt very much like everything had been stolen. And it was a place of really just getting, you know, knocked to the ground and not feeling like I had any power over my life toward meeting people in my community, connecting. You know, I sell film, but a big part of the film for me and the saving grace was all of these other people who are also in the film, in the UK, in Denmark, in the US, that I and even here in Australia, that I met and filmed with. And I think that really, that sense of community helped me to find a sense of purpose and to become someone with a disability, which means a person who is still fully human and living here and has found a way to really get a lot of my life back. And I think disability is also a positive identity. It's an identity that says we may have different needs and need different things in order to be able to live meaningful lives, but we're still here. And we're fighting for ourselves.
How did it feel when you got ill? I mean, there's this extraordinary sense of just what is happening, what is going on in my life?
I think there were a lot of days. So at the time I got sick, I was a PhD student at Harvard, and my whole life I had derived my sense of self from my ability to read and write and think. And I was laying in that bed, unable to read or write or think. And a lot of days I wondered what was the point. What value did my life still have if I couldn't do all of the things that made me who I was? And I think that's really what makes this disease so vicious. Mm. It doesn't matter if, you know, you derive your identity from being a scientist or a mother or a mountain climber. It takes from you whatever it was that you loved about your life. And that's why I describe it as like this sort of custom prison, because it is something that saps your ability to do. And that's really, I think, what makes it so both hard to understand as well as so particularly hard to live with.
And well, to live with, Omar, I mean, how did that look secondhand? How did that look from the outside?
It's been exceedingly hard at times. I mean, we were married just under 5 years ago and starting our lives together. And I could imagine being a caretaker, you know, maybe late in life, but not at the beginning of our marriage. And so it was demanding, clearly for her, also for me too, as the primary caregiver. I was starting a new job and just felt at times like we were drowning. But we have been really good partners to each other, in that there's been a kind of relentless optimism that at least one of us had at any moment. And so that has allowed us to really kind of make it through the tough times and support each other. And it's also been something where I feel like my heart is much bigger for this experience. I have a lot more empathy for other people's struggles, and for that I'm grateful.
Omar Wasso and Jennifer Breyer are with us, a remarkable couple, and Jennifer has put together an amazing film called Unrest, and we'll tell you where you can see that in a moment. But this is one of the things of your story, is of the love between the two of you, which in a way this test that your illness, Jennifer, has presented, is it's allowed you to explore something quite remarkable as two people.
I often feel like we've already been married for a lifetime, in the best possible way.
That was that lifetime.
No, I feel like we've been married for 50 years. And by that, I just mean that, yes, we have been tested. And I think through that have come to know each other so much better and have this profound sense of love, not just from, oh, we enjoy each other and love to do things together, but love that is about, I guess, really finding out what's essential in life and being pushed to that point of, I mean, it has been so hard because I see what this does to Omar, and I have felt so guilty for so long about that. And at the
you
same
two
time,
have that conversation in the film.
We do, and we still have it on occasion because it is so hard to you know, have my husband be my caregiver, and I worry about what that does to him. And at the same time, I think it's really deepened our relationship because we've had to come to terms with what really matters in life and in that relationship together. And I am just so grateful every day that I found this person who loves me no matter what, because so many of us whether we are well or ill, don't get a chance to find that. So I there are blessings even amid all of this.
What is that thing, Omar, that matters? What is that thing that matters most?
I think we feel, I mean, I know with her, I'm not alone. I've been kind of an odd duck for much of my life. And she's like, with Jen, I'm not, you know, somebody who's peculiar. Like, we might be weird, but together we're not weird to each other. And that feeling of connection and being able to kind of share the fullness of yourself with another person, it's such a gift. And, mm-hmm. and for that, I just feel really lucky.
There are stories in the film Unrest that are not so uplifting, that are in a way deeply tragic, and this goes to the understanding of, and I'll try here to say the E word, and I can go with myalgic and encephalomyelitis. Ah, it came out okay. The understanding of this as a condition, the scientific work that needs to be undertaken is agonizingly slow, and there are families, there are couples, there are people, as you've discovered, Jennifer, all around the world who are laboring in this unknowing.
Yeah, and it's been decades of really neglect by the research community and by the funding bodies, and I think that's made it really hard. I mean, there's been science stretching back for decades describing some of the core features of the disease, both in terms of the problems we have with basic energy metabolism on a cellular level, the immune dysfunction, but we haven't had the scale of investment that other similarly disabling diseases have had. I think there is really good news, which is that there is starting to be more research all around the world, in the U.S. at Harvard and Stanford, here at Griffiths. There's been some amazing work coming out and exciting new progress towards a biomarker. And so I think that collaboration, it really gives me a lot of hope. But in order for it to result in meaningful change in my lifetime, like to make a difference in my life while I'm still young, I think we need probably about 50 times the investment that we currently have. So that's really a part of what I'm fighting for.
And we're in a moment right now where, for much of the last, call it half century, the dominant idea about this illness has been that it's in some ways, you know, all in the heads of the patients. Mm. And as Jen noted, there's just this sort of now overwhelming body of evidence that this is a physiological disease. And so the case is there for doing the research to be able to now sort of unpack what's going on. But government moves slowly, research funds move slowly. And so the patient community, and there's a growing body of scientists who are ready to really try and turn what is a profoundly debilitating illness into something that might be more manageable, but we need more change. And so that's the other part of why the film needs to do work in the world, is to help people understand.
The change in perception broadly too. I mean, this is a condition that's so often sort of derided and dismissed.
I think part of it has been this horrible name, chronic fatigue syndrome, which is almost too familiar, right? We all think we get tired from time to time. And what we're talking about here is really some kind of acquired metabolic defect that, you know, where I have a really, you know, a ceiling in terms of how much energy I can use. And if I go past that, I crash. And I think part of what's been really hard is that the disability that we experience for most of us is not permanent. It's contextual. It's cyclical. And so I may be sitting here right now talking to you, Jonathan, and present as totally fine other
Describe
than that I'm
crash.
In a wheelchair.
Describe that crash. I mean, what happens, let's say, later today?
So I might fairly suddenly find that I become so weak that I need to just lie down on the floor and I won't be able to move my head. Lift my head. I have severe muscle weakness, and sometimes I'll start to lose the ability to speak or even fully recognize who I am or where I am or who my husband is. And it's if I push myself really hard, I will get this sense of kind of swelling and pressure in my head and in my spinal cord. And fortunately now I've learned how to manage and do what's called pacing, which is to sort of stay within those limits and not go across that red line. Mm. But in the early days, I didn't get good advice. And so I was actually really mildly affected. I would only, quote, crash when I rode my bike for 12 hours, you know?
12 miles.
12 miles. So, and I
12 hours.
Yeah, yeah, 12 miles, right? And so like, I started noticing things where I would ride, I would go on a 12-mile bike ride and only make it to mile six, and I wouldn't know why. But because doctors kept telling me there was nothing wrong and kept encouraging me to exercise, I just went about my life and not understanding what I was doing to myself, and I got worse and worse and worse. So I was pushing those limits. Now I stay within my limits, and that allows me to live a better life. But I think, you know, had I gotten advice to pace myself earlier, I don't think I ever would have become this sick. And so it's a really, I think, deceptive disease. Because we can look well in one moment, but then if we overdo it, we can crash for days or weeks, and then you won't even see us.
Yeah, I'm just trying to imagine, Omar, too, your response in that initial time too of come on, get out of this. It must have been a strong temptation to just say come on.
Well, and I think as humans, we're all kind of looking for the person who's trying to get over on us. And so you're almost predisposed that when you don't see somebody kind of stepping up and working hard, that maybe there's, they're not trying
hard enough or something.
And I came from a family where part of what it meant to somehow be alive was to like schlep your own bags, you know, miles in the airport and carry as much, you know, be a pack mule was like somehow what it meant to be a good person. And so it was hard. And I definitely initially, particularly because we were getting advice from doctors, don't use the wheelchair, don't let your muscle tone go down, was betwixt and between. And it took a while for me to really appreciate how profound and physiological this was for Jen, that in fact, when I was pushing her, I was often then precipitating the crash that would knock her out for a week or two. And so
there was one time he really wanted me to go on a walk with him, and I was just like, I really can't. And he was like, no, come on. And I was like, I don't think I can. I can feel that I can't. But, you know, I love him and I really wanted to go, and I knew it would be fun. And so I did. And then I crashed in bed for 6 months. So when I was more severe, that's what would happen. And fortunately, my crashes are getting shorter and shorter. So I might crash for 3 days. But it was really hard to learn how to live with this without that medical advice early on.
This is a film you need to see to get some of that understanding. And if you watch this film, Unrest, you will emerge with an understanding of a lot of things of that disease and of something of the nature of how people are and how people might be together. The film's made by Jennifer Breyer, and her husband is Omar Wasso, and they've been our guests. Unrest is Jennifer's documentary. It's screening as part of the Melbourne International Film Festival, and I'm sure it will flit about the country subsequently. Thank you both so much, you two.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.